ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. This month, YPulse, the leading authority on Gen Z and millennial opinions and behaviors, released a new trend report on how the past year affected young consumers' brand affinity. Mary Lee Bliss, YPulse's VP of Content, is here to discuss what YPulse's research can tell us. Mary Lee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. I'm really looking forward to digging into the detail of YPulse's brand affinity trend report and also a bit of a sneak peek into your white paper on which brands grew purchase intent with young consumers. But first, I would like to have you give us a quick overview of YPulse's general methodology for your more typical trend reports. And then, because this affinity report is a bit different, and so I'd like to understand where the data for this particular report came from and how we define measures and how change is measured. But first, the overall, your typical ongoing trend reports. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Well, YPulse is serving young consumers 13 to 39 all of the time in a variety of ways. One of the ways that we do that is through, you know, traditional surveys that are fielded among 1,000 young people in the U.S. We survey three times a month with traditional surveys that are covering behavior and trend changes. And, you know, so we're really getting constant data about young consumers. But even more constant is our brand data. We have an ongoing brand tracker that measures the brand health of over 400 brands every week. We collect responses daily on that among 13 to 39 year olds in the US as well. And so over the course of a year, we collect over 100,000 interviews of young consumers asking all about how they feel about the brands in their lives. And the diagnostics that we look at are really specific to young consumers. There's a lot of testing that went into what matters to them when it comes to brand love and brand affinity. And so we track over, we track 20 diagnostics to measure how they feel about brands. And we ask everything from what brands they think are innovative or trustworthy to what brands, of course, they think are cool or that get them. We look at influence, so brands that they've heard positive things about or that they are paying more attention to. And then we actually added last year CSR measures because we know that that's been really important to young consumers for a long time, but is increasingly becoming a focus for brands as young consumers age up and become more of their target audience.
For this specific, when you're doing year over year comparison, do you compare from, because this year has been a bit of an odd year, did you compare from January to December? What are the year comparison points?
Yeah, so 2020 was really intense and difficult. So we looked at actually post-COVID changes.
Okay.
Because, you know, the events of this year are such an anomaly. And one of the main things that we were looking for when analyzing our brand data for this report was to see how did the events of the pandemic really impact young consumers' views of brands. So we looked at changes from March 2020 through the end of November 2020. Mm-hmm. Often looking at the performance over time of an industry or a brand, because we're tracking, as I said, every day. Mm-hmm. So we really look, you know, are able to see how brand affinity changes day to day, month to month, quarter to quarter, et cetera. But when we looked at things like biggest changes over the year, we looked at 3 month averages from March to May and compared it to the end of the year averages from September to pretty much December.
I see. Right. That makes sense. So you're dealing in a similar landscape of
exactly
what's going on.
Exactly.
So going back to, because I did cut you off there to understand the age range or the date ranges, the buckets, if you will, that you measure this brand affinity against, you said personality, influence, CSR, now also relevance.
Moments and momentum.
Okay.
Those are the big buckets. And then underneath those live 20 specific diagnostics. So really brands who are a part of our brand tracker are able to get granular. You know, we have an overall score we call Y Score Plus that pulls all of those diagnostics together and gives them an overall measure of how their brand is performing when it comes to youth affinity. Mm-hmm. But they can also dig in, you know, where are we, performing well? Why is our score the way that it is? Is it because our CSR efforts are doing well, or do we need to bulk those up and make those more clear? Is it because young people are talking about us and feel like we have a bright future?
I guess that's my question. So if I'm a brand, let's just pick as a brand, what's a brand?
Nike. Apple.
Nike. Let's say Nike. Yes. I mean, yeah. I don't know why I couldn't come up with one, but let's say Nike.
It's always Nike.
All right. So let's say we're talking about Nike and I'm sitting at Nike and I'm looking at the personality aspect of the score and the components, the innovative, true to self, trustworthy, reliable. Now, is that what Jane and John consumer feel about me, Nike? Is it about how Nike makes me feel about me? Explain exactly how you get that.
We're asking young consumers how they feel about specific brands that they are aware of. So of course we're not asking, if they're not aware of the brand, we're not going to ask them these questions. Mm-hmm. But when they go through the survey, they're in a specific industry track. So, you know, with Nike, they'd be looking at all fashion and apparel brands. So they're only comparing Nike to other brands like Nike.
Okay.
And they would be asked, is this a brand that's innovative? Is this a brand that's true to itself? Reliable, trustworthy, recommended, all of the different diagnostics. So it's really how they feel about that brand.
And is it a comparative zero sum assessment? Like if you feel X about Nike, you can't put that in for Adidas, or each brand is assessed individually so they can have the same true to self score, for instance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Each brand is assessed on their own merits. They're, you know, it's not, you can only give so much love to one brand or another. Though I will say, you know, overall, we do, you know, kind of see that there are limits to how much brand love people can have, right?
Right.
They don't often feel very, very strongly about multiple brands in a category.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if I'm, now I'm sort of thinking about the entire Y score.
Yeah.
And we have these different component parts and you track them and then you combine them. If I'm in CPG and I look at the chart for 2020, and I see how these different measures trend, I don't see a lot of volatility. Now, is that just because there isn't typically a lot of volatility? What do I take away from that?
So one of the things that we were really looking for when we looked at the performance of industries over the course of post-COVID 2020 was, you know, were there major changes? You know, CPG, for example, had enormous booms.
Right.
Huge amounts of new users of their products.
Right.
Because of panic buying, stock buying, but also trends like, you know, we wrote a trend report called Comfort in the Kitchen, you know, all about young consumers' reliance on cooking and comfort foods. You know, they were buying a lot of things that they hadn't in the past because they were looking for comfort.
Well, and also I remember you and I talked about how because of the panic buying, some of them were experimenting with brands they hadn't previously bought because that was what was on offer, and that offered an opportunity for brands to have more exposure to consumers they hadn't typically reached.
Right. So one might think, okay, CPG, CPG had a bang up year. So probably their youth affinity flew through the roof. But when we really looked at not just CPG, but all industries across 2020 post-COVID, we found that there was almost a washout of perception and youth affinities across industries, almost a flatlining. And, you know, what we really say is blame 2020. Young consumers, all consumers, let's be honest, but we're looking at young consumers here. Young consumers had a difficult, difficult year. And that impacted their worldview, their outlook in general. And we, in our data, absolutely found that it also impacted their feelings about brands. So even though they were buying these brands more, that didn't necessarily mean that their affinity for these brands grew enormously, which means that even if you're an industry that had performed really well in 2020 among young consumers, you still have work to do.
Oh, that's interesting. Their personal
feelings,
the gray scrum that the scrim that fell over everybody. It colored everything a bit.
Yes, it did. It did. You know, the positive news is that very few industries that we look at suffered huge losses in perception.
That's good.
A lot of industries suffered. You know, there were some industries that did, you know, had really great years in terms of revenue, and there were many industries that did not. But we didn't see that, you know, those losses in revenue equaled losses in perception necessarily. But no industry really saw massive gains either.
Well, one of the things I noticed when looking at the breakout charts is that personality was often leading the pack. Mm-hmm. So two questions around that. Is that typical? And are the dimensions of the Y score weighted differently?
The dimensions are not weighted differently. So they're all evenly contributing to what the Y score is, that overall youth affinity score that lets, you know, really allows you to see the overall health, that Y score plus. Personality is often a leader. It makes a lot of sense, right? That's what the relationship with the brand is often based on. That's often what we see. And yes, you know, some brands did see some increases in personality scores that served them well and helped to boost their affinity overall. Household goods is one of those industries that actually saw increases. But we saw brands that saw decreases as well that, you know, you might not expect, like alcoholic beverages as an industry.
I was so surprised by that.
I was really,
you know, and I had been joking with a friend of mine on the 6th of January that was it for my dry January.
Sure. Yeah.
But
many people agree with you.
It's like too much. But I was really... The alcoholic beverage industry, certainly among the people I know, there was a lot of conversation around how our relationship with alcohol progressed over the course of the pandemic.
Sure. And we saw absolutely in our behavioral data that there were increases in daily drinking among millennials 21 plus. So again, you know, similar to CPG, you know, big sales across 2020 and for that industry, and also a change in how people were purchasing and interacting with those brands. But in terms of affinity scores, those changes weren't necessarily positive for the industry.
That's interesting. So people would say, I'm drinking more, but I don't feel necessarily good about it. I'm associating this with this negative thing.
Survival,
right.
Getting through... you know, blocking out the stress, as opposed to going out, meeting friends, interacting
right.
with those brands in a fun, public, communal way. You know, those are positive associations that maybe were really taken away from many alcoholic beverage brands this year.
Well, and I'm curious, sort of two things. Going back to personality that we saw leading the pack, which makes sense, is that often a leading indicator of, you know, sort of if a new brand emerges on the scene, you see the personality piece pop and that gives you a sense of where the others will follow? Because in order to get relevance or influence or momentum, you have to have an anchor point first. Do you see personality as the lead point?
That's a great question. It really depends on the brand.
Okay.
We're analyzing things on an industry basis for this report where we're looking at, you know, how did 2020 impact things?
Right.
But often we, you know, are getting very granular comparing individual brand performances and within an industry, you know, for example, in the beauty industry, when a brand like Kylie Jenner's, you know, emerged and, you know, affinity flew off the charts.
Right.
A lot of that was actually driven by momentum. You know, it was a hot brand that talked about a lot, you know, because here's an influencer who, you know, who's at the forefront of it, you know, the face of it and pushing it, where personality, you know, whether it's reliable and trustworthy, you know, that's not necessarily, going to be a big deal for, you know, that particular example of a brand. So really,
right.
It really can depend. And so we, you know, do really dig into which measures are performing better for individual brands when they are part of the brand tracker and are a pro client of YPulse.
So if I'm a brand and I'm performing well on certain segments of the brand tracker, is that an indicator that I should be leaning into those things for advertising? Or is that, you know, these are your good points, but gee, here's where you need to shore it up. So you should lean into these other areas. When you're talking to brands about how to use the information, what are the takeaways?
Yeah, it's really helpful to see the areas that need to be strengthened.
Okay.
But at the same time, some brands will look and say, you know we're really good at these, you know, three things that are performing really strongly. So we're going to make sure, you know, we always tell brands they need to be in constant beta.
Right.
So, you know, we're going to make sure we keep innovating on those ends. Don't let those fall. But maybe choose one or two of the weaker components of our brand affinity to work on next.
Well, and as we've discussed sort of ad nauseum to some degree, is that 2020 was such a strange year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you typically look year over year at this kind of thing? And are changes more gradual? And this is just such an outlier year that, you know, who knows if this will stay or, you know, 2021 will be interesting to see how much trailing influence 2020 has on brands. Or how should people think about this point in time, this read? Are these changes liable to be durable?
Yeah, it's a great question. And part of it is going to be us tracking that over time.
Okay.
Over 2021 to see what happens this year. And I think what 2020 taught us is that we can't predict as much as we used to be able to.
Right.
So it will be interesting. You know, some people within, you know, some industries are saying that if all goes well, that 2021 might be more comparable to 2019 than 2020. Right.
Right.
But it depends on so many factors. And it also depends on multiple factors for each industry. You know,
right.
We might see, people more comfortable going back to restaurants once the vaccine is spread, but not quite ready to travel yet.
Right.
You know, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what bounces back and how
exactly.
It does it. Now, going back into, you know, if we were talking about winners or losers, and we talked about, you know, home goods, win, alcohol, lost, fashion, why would that improve?
Well, young consumers certainly continue to buy clothes, just different clothes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right. So, you know, workwear, no, not so much.
Right.
But
lots of yoga pants.
A lot of yoga pants and a lot of comfy clothes. And a lot of brands really quickly pivoted to those things during the pandemic. So, you know, they also became more comfortable with buying clothing online. So, you know, the barriers to that shifted. And while we don't track the different platforms that are becoming more popular, like Depop and ThredUp, you know, those secondhand marketplaces sell brands like Nike, right. Vans, Champion, Under Armour, you know, brands that are performing well.
Right.
Or, you know, among young consumers. So, even if they're not able to buy directly from the retailers firsthand, they might still have access to those brands because right. of this, you know, huge shift in how young people are buying clothes.
It's interesting. I had trouble following health and beauty and CPG in terms of what the headline was that I should take away for each of those. If you were to give a headline for CPG, what would that be?
I think what we spoke about earlier would be a major takeaway for me, that even though you might have had a great year of sales, doesn't necessarily mean that your work is done when it comes to winning young consumers' affinity. You know, really, it was a flatline year.
Okay.
For CPG. And
so, what about health and beauty? Is that a similar kind of...
Yeah, health and beauty was interesting because we did see for young consumers that...
because I thought self-care was a kind of
exactly,
a hot
that
thing.
Self-care was on the rise, that, you know, there were, you know, huge trends in, you know, things like taking baths and skincare,
right.
You know, taking care of yourself at home. But there were also brands within the health and beauty category, because, you know, we're looking at the industry overall, right?
Right.
That became less used. So, you know, makeup brands and makeup retailers, Sephora, Ulta, you know, not as many young consumers, female young consumers were wearing makeup this year.
Right.
We saw that really clearly in our behavioral data.
Sure.
You know, certain brands actually saw decreases in sales this year in the health and beauty category, including deodorant. You know, people aren't leaving the house as much. So
family we can smell for. That's
exactly.
really funny.
But, you know, really that was a category that saw decreases in sales in 2020. And so, you know, when you are looking at an industry, of course, you need to consider all of the different kinds of brands within that industry. And not all brands really benefited from that at home.
Well, and this is one of the things I really wanted to drill into is some specific brands, because I was really surprised to see Spotify and Amazon Prime show a loss, because I thought entertainment blew doors off. So I was really interested in that. And then similarly, Samsung climbed 10 points. And so what's behind some of these impressive gains and losses?
Sure. We did look at the brands that saw the biggest changes in Y-score. So across the year after COVID. So both looking at, you know, who had the biggest gains and who had the biggest losses. And yes, there were certainly some surprises in there.
Mm.
You know, I would say when it comes to Amazon Prime Video, which saw, you know, some big losses, or Spotify, there was a lot of competition when it came to at-home entertainment. Uh-huh. And in addition, you know, for a brand like Spotify, they actually saw at the beginning of the pandemic that certain categories were being listened to less.
Mm.
So, you know, the placement of that brand in young consumers' lives was often something that they were using on the go.
Right.
Now they adjusted and, you know, used it just as much, but, you know, maybe their affinity for it didn't necessarily strengthen.
Right. So I was also curious about the alignment between a brand, that consumers felt responded well to COVID and where they landed in affinity, and if there was actually any relationship there.
Yeah, that was really interesting for us, because we did ask when COVID hit, we began to ask which brands have done a good job responding to COVID-19. And overall, we saw of course, health brands or health focused brands like Clorox and Lysol, you know, brands that they felt were helping them to combat the virus were on towards the top of that list, number 2 and 3 for Clorox and Lysol, brands that were helping them to find answers. Mm-hmm. Google was number 1. YouTube was number 8. And then brands that were helping them to get the things that they needed. Amazon was number 5, Walmart was number 6 on there, CVS was number 9. So, you know, those were some of the big themes that we saw when it came to the brands that they felt were doing a good job responding to COVID-19. It was really the brands that were helping them to get through.
Right.
But the perception that those brands handled the crisis well was not always indicative of whether they ended up on the top Y-score performing.
There were
some who did. YouTube, Netflix, Google, Amazon, those all performed very well. But they also are brands that tend to do incredibly well
among young people. Those are strong performers.
COVID-19 is happening or not. But it was not necessarily meaningless that young consumers felt that these brands were doing well. You know, Clorox and Lysol, you know, are big players, of course, in household goods. And that was one of the few industries that we saw overall had a lift in affinity.
Right. Now, one of the things I wanted to ask about, and, you know, you had added corporate social responsibility as a slice even. And obviously this year was a big year where Black Lives Matter and diversity was a huge issue. And we even had a whole episode where we talked about brand activism and what it meant. How important was activism in terms of, you know, specifically I'm thinking about entertainment and media, because that was sort of front and center. Everybody sees it. So how did they shake out there?
Yeah. CSR is, first of all, at this point, just an entry bar with young consumers. Mm-hmm. So, we're not, you know, it's not necessarily that every brand is performing amazingly on that.
Right.
They need to be putting some effort into their CSR and communicating that very clearly to young consumers in order to be at the table with them.
Right.
When it comes to media, tech, and entertainment, our behavioral and trend data shows really clearly that young consumers feel there are major strides that still need to be made.
Right.
In diversity and inclusion. And structural changes as well. So, you know, among pretty much every industry, including media, tech, and entertainment, CSR tends to be one of the lower performing scores overall.
Right. Well, I suppose one of the things for that industry is one that just is, because it's so visible, because it's... you don't necessarily, if you're buying, if you're not as a consumer, you don't necessarily know the corporate structure for Clorox. You don't necessarily know who the spokespeople for Clorox are. Yeah. The way, if you're looking at an entertainment brand, you see who the newscasters are and are they diverse, are they not diverse? And so in some ways, this is a bar which is very front and center because it's very public for entertainment.
Yeah.
So interesting. Lastly, while we still have some time, can you give us a little peek into purchase intent? You've been looking at that.
Yeah. So we track youth affinity across all of the diagnostics, some of which we've discussed in depth. But the brand tracker also looks at something we call mind share, which is, you know, how aware are young consumers of your brand overall? How loyal are they to your brand overall? Mind share really looks at a scale of their relationship to your brand in terms of awareness and loyalty and whether it's one of their favorites. And then we also look at purchase intent. So are they likely to buy your brand in the future? How many have used or bought your brand in the past? So, you know, we're really looking at purchase intent across 2020 to see what are the brands that have seen the biggest gains. And, you know, that really will, you know, which brands have young consumers used and bought more across 2020, which clearly we saw in the affinity report. You know, it's not necessarily tied to how much they love your brand, but is another measure of your brand's success with young consumers, right?
Right. Right. So
overall, we see some really interesting things on that. And a sneak peek would be, you know, in the top 20 of the brands that saw purchasing increase overall for the year, are some surprises when it comes to young consumers. And one of them would be Classico pasta sauce. You know, you necessarily think like, oh, they're going, but it was 2020. And so, you know, they were stocking up on things that made it easy for them to get a meal on the table often. We also, of course, saw several alcohol brands on there for 21 plus consumers. But the categories of alcohol brands that saw the most increases in purchases really indicate some changes for the industry. So we see Truly, White Claw, and Bud Light Seltzer are all on the top 20 list.
Oh, that's interesting.
That speaks volumes for where that industry is going.
Right.
And the changes that big, huge brands are making clearly need to make in order to keep up with young drinkers who are not necessarily just buying beer anymore. And there's a lot of competition within that hard seltzer category. And now hard tea projected to be a big trend going forward as well. So we'll see more shakeups. But clearly the ones that are winning a lot of purchases are those hard seltzers.
This has been great. I think that everyone is going to find this information so very valuable. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much as well. I'm thrilled to be able to talk about a different kind of data that YPulse collects. And, you know, brand affinity is so interesting to us. We're looking at it literally every single day.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next. So I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time right here on Up Next.